Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, my friends, to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for Saturday, May the 15th, 2010. I thank you so much for coming here and joining us this morning. It is truly, truly a joy to have you here. I don't care how often I say that. I mean it every time that I say it. My voice sounds a little bit different. I went out walking a couple of days ago, and they were digging up the grass, and I think it kicked my allergies in full speed ahead. So my voice sounds a little bit different. For those of you that this is your first time coming to Off the Shelf, I'll introduce myself. My name is Denise Turney, and I'm coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I just thank you so much for your support. And I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is a powerfully moving, inspirational book that you need to add to your book collection. You can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistell.com. You can also pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walmart, etc. If you don't see it on the bookstore shelf, just ask the clerk for it, and they can order a copy for you because it's carried by the largest book distributors in the world. And now today, there's another book that you definitely have to get by today's special guest. I am so honored. When I went on the internet, and I was just telling her this, when I was on the internet, I forgot what I was searching for, but I came across this page where I saw about this book, Orphan Through the Eyes of an Orphan, by our special guest today. She wrote this book, and I was so moved. Oh, my goodness, the emotion that went through me. So I said, I'd like to have her on Off the Shelf just to share. Oh, my goodness, her life, you're going to be amazed with our listeners here today. And I said, you know what, she's probably booked, and I probably can't. She probably doesn't have time. But I reached out to her, and she was so gracious and reached back and said she could appear on Off the Shelf today. I'm so happy to have her with us. She's a writer who has faced and overcome deep challenges early in her life when many people say that's the hardest time to get over the things that happen early to you. She is a writer who is using her own childhood, her hurts, her triumphs, her joys, her pain to help other children to heal and to avoid experiencing some of the same things that she did that could be helped if we change some of the things in some of our government systems. And I just say, if that's not love, I don't know what it is. When people go back, they say, and sometimes as parents we do it, this hurt me, so I want to help someone else not to have to live through that. To me, that is truly love. She's a woman who is actually acting out love. And this remarkable woman for our listeners here at Off the Shelf is Elizabeth Wiebe. And her last name, if you want to look her up on the internet to find out more about her and check out her book, her last name is spelled W-I-E-B-E, Elizabeth Wiebe. She is the author of the moving book, and I think she should be on Oprah and many, many other talk shows. But she's the author of the moving book, Orphan, Through the Eyes of an Orphan. And you'll want to write that down and go get a copy of her book. Elizabeth Wiebe is also the founder of the Elizabeth Wiebe Society for Orphan Children in Canada. And she's just amazing me. I haven't even started talking to her. She's online at HTTP or just www.squidoo.com/ Elizabeth Wiebe Society / this template. So again, that's www.squidoo.com/ Elizabeth Wiebe Society / template. Please visit her and bookmark her page. I just want to say welcome, welcome, welcome to Off the Shelf, Elizabeth. You have no idea. I've been looking forward to this interview.
Thank you so much, Denise. It's such a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
I am so, I tell you, this interview had me like, oh, my God, I can't wait till I meet her and talk to her. And you probably don't, when you hear me, you're probably like, why does she keep saying, like, I think you're just so remarkable. But sometimes we don't see in ourselves what other people see in us, just a champion or just a triumphant woman.
You're very kind.
No, I'm being very honest. And like I said, when I came across your book on the internet, I just said, I was just so emotionally moved. I can't tell you. It was like a river of emotion. Mm-hmm. I said, I just had to have you on, and I just thank you for being on the show today. And who knows who will be reached and touched and helped to heal today, somebody who might be an adult who went through something similar, and they'd just be so thankful. I wanted to ask you first, what was life like growing up in Winnipeg, in the city itself?
Well, when I first, at the earliest years, my mother died when I was 18 months old, and so I was between family and my father, who is now a widower with three little children. I was the youngest. And my mother died of a brain tumor when I was 18 months. And there was always a factor of insecurity. I didn't really remember my mom. I remembered her, one glimpse of her, but that was all. But there was always a feeling of something major missing in my life. Mm. And it gave me a lot of insecurity. And then at the age of seven, or rather at six, my father developed cancer, and he died when I was seven. And those years were very, very tough because I already knew loss.
Yeah.
And then I was taken in by relatives on the farm in the rural area, which was new to me as well.
Okay, so that was just so much change. And one way that I connect with your story is my mother passed suddenly, just very unexpectedly, and I was 7 years old. And I think that might be why, and my father, you know, he survived and did raise five children by himself, but that is a huge loss. And even at seven, I have very, very few memories of my mom. She's like a... You can't even hardly, like, put the parent together. It's, you know you had a parent, but it's the memories and stuff is hard to put together. So that I do can relate to that.
Are quite strong to the age of 2 years old.
Wow.
And that's why I was able to write this book.
That's amazing. You know, I can't even remember zip before I was five. Like, nothing. Yeah. That is amazing that you were able. I was telling you, my mom passed suddenly, and I've done so much to, and that event has shaped all the rest of my life, despite how much I've done to try to live my life. I think, and it wasn't until recently that I realized that I tried to live my life as if I had a mother, to like be like other people, most people who do. And I have very, very few memories. And then I was going to ask you if you have memories of one or both of your parents. And you said you do. So you have a lot of memories of your father, I'm sure.
I have many memories of my father. We were very, very close. And when he died, I was also separated from my two brothers. So it was a real feeling of abandonment at that time. And that was the reason, when I wrote my book, I had just been laid off work, and when I wrote my book, I wanted to put my feelings down on paper, but as I was writing it, a lot of the memories came forward, of course, and I decided that I would have it published because it was important information, that it was educational. I wanted people to understand that children know what happens in their life, that they understand, even though they can't express it. Mm-hmm. They know what is happening in their life.
You know, that is... No, go ahead.
No, a lot of people, when I was taken into this family, thought that I was just in another family now and accept it, you know, and go on. But they didn't understand that there was this memory, this huge memory.
Mm.
And they expected me to just forget it. I have a quote at the beginning of my book. It says, the lesson for adoptive parents is that they should not pretend their children's lives began when they came into their new surroundings.
Mm.
And that's a quote from Dr. Bruce Lipton. And it's very important. People think that children don't have a clue what's going on. And so they don't bother explaining or sharing or wanting to listen to them. They don't want to hear this. And the focus of my book is more on the psychological trauma that people, the children that are abandoned are experiencing.
You know, and I would say that what you're saying is so true. I don't know why this happens with adults, but I've heard a lot of people say, like my dad used to say this, and as I got older, it would upset me that children are resilient. People say, you know, kids don't let things bother them. And I always said kids are just busy playing. And I think children also are busy trying to live up to what they perceive, whatever the adults around them really would hope that they would be like. And I think they're trying to fit into that mold of, well, so-and-so wants me to be happier this way, so that's the way
that
I'm going to.
That's absolutely correct.
And it doesn't mean that the child really is happy. It's just that they're trying to live up to, you know, I want them to be proud of me. I want to fit in. So let me just do what I
want to be loved.
Yeah.
Be loved. I mustn't be crying.
Right.
When I got hurt at my most profound hurts in my childhood years, I would go and hide. I would cry in the corner of a building or behind a building, but I would not do it in front of people. And that was very strong.
Yeah, and to be, I don't know. Again, this hopefully this will help bring a lot to light. Your book and also this interview. I don't know why children. People see children as just happy play, and even kids who are viciously abused. It's almost like whatever happens to a person when they're a kid, it just washes itself off, and the only things that really matter are what happened to you when you become an adult, and that is so absolutely absurd. I don't even know where that train of thought comes from. It's almost like you can hurt a kid, and that's okay,
yes,
because the only things that really matter for a person are what happens to them when they become an adult, and we actually, what happens to us when we're children is what shapes our adult lives.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you before I move on into your book, just to speak a little bit, having a lady come on, an author on Off the Shelf in the coming weeks, her spouse and a child passed away in an automobile accident at the same time, and one of her children did survive the accident. She was left to raise that child as a single parent. But people don't tell you this story, like I'm sure when you go shopping or I'm out, we assume, I guess, that either we have a harder life experience than everybody else, or that almost generally that everybody else's life is somehow better than ours, and we don't ever take the time to really get to know each other. I've known some people for years that I'm sure if they told me deep things about themselves, I'd probably be shocked.
Yes.
We can spend so much time around each other. It's similar to what we're talking about with going into another family where people don't really even know what you're thinking. Why do you think that we don't take the time, especially even as adults, where we should know better, I would think, to really get to know each other?
I know. And that really, we delve into the psychology, and people have been frustrated with my book because it's quiet. And that's how my life was. It was quiet. And underneath that, there was tremendous trauma. And the point of my book was that not all trauma is drama. And people don't want to get themselves involved in this cycle because that takes time.
Yes.
It takes time. And people don't want to take the time. And they don't really want to understand. They're so self-absorbed. I'm talking about myself. I'm talking about everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We have that tendency not to want to take time. It's easy, for example, to take a Band-Aid and put it on a child's arm or you know, do physical things.
Mm-hmm.
But to delve into the psychological, that takes time and patience and understanding and compassion.
Now, just for our listeners here, I know the answer, but just for our listeners, Orphan Through the Eyes of an Orphan, could you let us know if it's fiction or nonfiction? And then could you tell us a little bit more about the book? Is it you going back and the retelling of the child's life from a certain point on, as if the child was telling the story. How is the story presented, and is it a work of fiction or nonfiction? If you just let our listeners here know.
Yeah, thank you for the question. The book is totally true, and instead of writing it as a biography where I say I as Elizabeth, the key character's name is Irina, which is my middle name.
Okay.
And it's totally true. I wrote it as I remembered it. And I changed the names of many of my family in there so that, you know, the intention was not to hurt feelings. The intention was to show, the whole purpose of my book was to show the thinking of the child, what were the inner thoughts of the child experiencing these huge losses.
Mm. Had you, now, when you were a child, you said you were got separated from your brothers, and that was before your father passed, is that correct? Your brothers were living someplace else?
My brothers were with my father all the time. I was taken to relatives much of the time. And in between there, I would come back home and stay with my father and brothers. But at the time of my father's passing, then I was taken into family who were in the country, and we were separated when I was 7.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, have your family members read the book Orphan through the eyes of an orphan? And if so, what's their reception of the book been like?
Interesting question. That was one of the reasons I didn't want to, I had reluctance to have it published. I was very fortunate in having the family I had, but things happened in my teens. You see, when I turned 16, my aunt, who had become like my mother, she had cancer and died.
And she was the one who was taking. She was the one, the aunt who was taking care of you.
Yes.
Okay.
And so everything changed in that family. And I became, instead of being what I felt like a daughter, I was now more like a cousin. And ultimately I left. And I voiced the hurt that I had in my book. And, of course, that's a sensitive area for family, and that's why I changed the names.
Okay.
I changed the village name, the town name, simply because I didn't want to point fingers. That was not the purpose of my book.
Okay.
I've had some friends tell me that it frustrated them greatly that I was so gentle in the book.
Oh.
And that I wasn't angry and that I wasn't pointing fingers and things like this.
Hmm.
And that was not the purpose of my book. One friend actually got quite angry at me, and he said, "Your book lacks a hook." And I said, "Well, that's the whole thing. I didn't write the book to be angry. I wrote the book to tell how a child thinks
mm-hmm.
when it is abandoned. I say abandoned when a child loses their parent for whatever reasons, it is abandoned." And I wanted to show how the child thinks and feels.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, "But it lacks a hook." And then I had been looking for someone other than me to write the foreword to my book.
Right.
And I said, "Well, that was the whole point. Nobody saw the incredible traumatic experience I had lived through, and life went on like it was nothing."
Yes.
And he said, "Well, why don't you write that in the book?" And then I knew what I was going to write in the foreword.
Okay.
I put in as the foreword, what is the point of this book? And the point is that the whole Irina, the character, her whole life had collapsed. The floor had fallen away from underneath her. And yet there were no broken bones or bruises.
Mm.
No visible scar. It was all so quiet. And so many, many books have been written and read about physical trauma, abuse, sexual abuse.
Yes, yes.
Many books, and people buy them. But this one doesn't talk about that. That wasn't the case. The case was that she was a little girl who had lost her whole family.
Yes.
She was in a new school. She was in a new, in a country village, and she had been in the city of Winnipeg, and now she was transposed into this new, and it was like nothing had happened.
And you know, I gotta say, from my own experience, I could say that similar happened with me too. It's almost like if you're a kid and a parent passes away, people don't want you to grieve because mm-hmm. then it'll cause them to feel badly, especially if I think they care for you. So they don't want that because they don't want to hurt themselves.
Right, right, right.
So it's almost like just be happy. Just be happy so I can be happy.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Be happy. And I knew that instinctively.
Yes.
I knew to be happy. And so when I hurt an experience where I hurt, for example, shortly after I was taken into my relative's family, I had another family who rarely was there come from the opposite end of the country to visit. And they said they would be pleased to adopt me, and instead of raising a fuss and saying, no, you can't have her, they said, well, you ask her, it's okay if you want to take her. And it hurt me so deeply that I didn't cry. Nobody knew I was hurt. I went in the far corner of the barn and cried my heart out because I didn't want people to know that I was hurting.
Yeah, and that's something. It's unfortunate. And as adults, I think we still do that, but as children mainly, because children are seen like they're just supposed to be happy all the time. I want to ask you, do children read Orphan through the Eyes of the Orphan, or has the audience for the book been mainly adult?
I've had most of my feedback from previous orphan children or foster children, and really enjoying my book. My book is not a heavy book. It's not one. I didn't want to write it in a whining, oh God, so long, you know. I wanted it to have humor in it as well as spirit and as well as the truth. It was all truthful. Children have read it at age 11 and enjoyed it very much.
Okay.
I have recently made an audio book of it. I haven't published it because I'm looking for someone who will. I have a list of songs or music that I want in the background to make it comprehensive, completely, make it more interesting. That is appropriate to the age that I was in. For example, I was in a Mennonite home, and I wanted Christian music in the background for a few, just a few stanzas.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the book to make it more interesting. But I think that is an audiobook is something that orphan kids or foster children would appreciate more than reading, because when you're grieving, you don't read.
Okay.
As a general point, people who are grieving, they haven't got the concentration to read. People who are anxious, children, when you're anxious, this is true for all ages. If you're very anxious or very depressed, reading is not something you take up. You do more of the listening.
So that's
why I had the audiobook made.
Very, very smart. I didn't know that, so I'm just learning something new today. That's a very, very good insight that I guess you just don't have the energy to focus enough.
Yes.
Maybe outward, you're just feeling so much pain inward that you.
Yeah.
But maybe reading would help too. Even though people don't do that, it might help
a little bit. Indeed. My background is in the healthcare field. I've been in the healthcare field all my life, and I know that people who are depressed, people who are very anxious, the concentration is one of the things that happens. It minimizes the concentration factor. So listening to music or listening to words is easier than reading.
Okay. For our listeners here, Elizabeth, and we are talking with and just an absolutely incredible woman, Elizabeth Weeb, and her last name is spelled W-I-E-B-E. She is the author of Orphan Through the Eyes of an Orphan. and she is online at www.squidoo.com/Elizabeth Weeb Society/template. She is also the founder of the Elizabeth Weeb Society for Orphan Children in Canada, and we are just honored to have her here today and encourage you to pick up a copy of her book, Orphan Through the Eyes of an Orphan. It's available online, so you can get it without even having to leave your home. Elizabeth, for our listeners who might know a child, I know you have the Elizabeth Weeb Society for Orphan Children in Canada, just different children in different parts of the world. I think about the earthquake in Haiti and what's going on in Darfur and how many children, they call them street children. They don't have family members even to go to. They're living literally at 5 years old trying to, they're just living in the street. For our listeners who might know a child who is orphaned or in a foster care system, and God bless the children who are, don't even have that, and they're just living in the street. What was the process like for you, just in that foster care system? You spoke about it briefly, you know, going to move in with different family members and having to hide your emotion. But for parents and adults who might be taking in a child, either through adoption or through foster care system, what can you tell them to help them help the child through this remarkable transition?
Thank you so much for that question. First of all, listen to the child. Allow them to express their feelings. Listen to them and be there as much of a support. Like, one of the biggest things that I felt, even to this day, is the sense, I'm an adult now, and many people are alone. You have many single families. But when it happens to you as a child, those feelings come forward big time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a feeling of abandonment and no backup. So if you get into a hard situation, you know there's nobody behind. It's up to you or you fall. Be there for the children when there's nobody there for them. Let them know that you're there for them. And spend some time with them. For example, this has been researched that children who are given, even orphan children who are given 15 minutes a day, helping them with reading or schoolwork or some project, will improve their grades for 2 points. And this
wow.
is consistent. They will jump from a C or a D to an A or a B.
Wow.
It's consistent, just 15 minutes a day.
Mm.
So time and listening. And let them express themselves. One of the things that I felt when I was a child is that there was a huge difference between people who cared, who had compassion, and then there were people who pitied you. And I grew up hating pity.
Yes.
It's a very negative emotion. So have compassion, but no pity.
Mm-hmm.
And also the children themselves should be encouraged not to think of themselves as victims. As you know, if children want to self-help them, I'm talking about little older children, in many ways they are victims. We all have times when we feel like victims.
Right.
But it's not something that when I would, if I were to speak, I'm not talking to the adults now, I'm speaking to the children. Don't allow yourself to think of yourself as a victim. I believe that we're all here for a reason,
mm-hmm.
and that we should fill our roles with courage and being heroes doing it.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing that. I do hope that our listeners who may know somebody who has adopted a child or somebody in foster care or who may even actually work as a professional in a foster care agency, that they can take that advice, what you said. And again, to repeat what you said, letting the child express themselves without pity, or if they cry, trying to get them to shh as soon as possible, trying to get them to stop crying as soon as possible. As soon as people cry, people are always like, shh,
yes.
Like,
well,
stop crying.
It has to come out, and it does come out. It comes out when you're in your teens. It comes out sometime, or it comes out in bad ways, if you can channel it into love.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You are just, oh, my gosh. I'm sitting here listening to you, and you have so much to share. I just tell you, you're not somebody who's just learned this from working with the children. You actually lived through it, and you've not just learned it through research. Again, you've lived through it. That said, just listening to you today, you have so much to share, and you have so much graciousness. It's coming through your voice. I can just keep coming out of you. Have you ever thought about creating, like, a radio show? Seminars, et cetera, something, or even being interviewed on various TV shows. And again, I don't know if you've ever reached out to Oprah, but this that type of a platform, something that has a global reach, thinking like the United Nations, I'm thinking people, organizations that work with children globally, as I was mentioning, the numbers of street children. They're literally living in the street and just picking up scraps of this and that to just to survive. I mean, five-year-olds living like that. But have you ever thought about creating that platform where you...
I have taken, I got, joined Toastmasters so that I speak, that I could speak better. And the whole idea is to share my information. I love to share my information.
And also, though, I mean, a larger platform where you're going on talk shows that might have millions and millions of listeners, where you're going on television.
I would welcome it.
Yeah, you have so much to share. If I'm just thinking that I'm trying to, if I find a source that lists these types of organizations, I'll shoot it out to you. But just to reach out to share this, you just have so much to share that could help. God only knows how many people, adults who grew up in the foster care system, and also children who are in there currently, and parents who are either thinking about or who have taken in a child who's lost one or both of their parents, and their parents might still be living, but deep into drug addiction or unable to care for the children psychologically, so now they've had to be placed. And you know, in a government-run agency, I wanted to ask you. For me, and maybe even for other people, my mom passed suddenly at 7 years old. Is this just? And this might be a personal question more for myself, but it could benefit our listeners. Is it something that you find yourself dealing with, what you went through off and on, even now throughout your adulthood? Does it ever completely go away?
No. I've spoken to many foster children and many orphan people as adults, and I spoke to one man who was very, very successful, world traveler, world businessman, and he was in foster care for a while, and his family let him go. He felt so abandoned. Very sad story. To this day, he says, that feeling when it hits you like a ton of bricks.
Mm.
And that feeling will never go away.
Mm.
No matter what psychology, NLP, whatever you take, there's some things you can deal with better, but that feeling comes back. And actually, what inspired me to write my book was not that I had planned it for a long time. It was that I was laid off from my work that I had been in quite a while. And I was prepared for it, I thought, but when it happened...
Oh, it triggered, yes.
It triggered abandonment.
Wow.
And it was as somebody said, well, I said, maybe I'll take a sabbatical year and do something important. And I didn't know what that would be. And one of my friends said, why don't you write a book?
Mm.
And I thought about it, and all of a sudden I said, yes, I'm going to write it. And that's how it came about. So that feeling, to your question, that feeling never disappears.
Yeah, I would say, you know, just so people who may have gone through, you know, a loss, either a parent or, again, some people have lost their parents. Their parent just walked out of their life. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot to some people and just never came back. And then some people, their parent was just so maybe psychologically too ill or drug addictions, yeah, and they had to be taken out of the home. Either way, the child feels an abandonment, and there are millions and millions, if not billions, of people who this has happened to.
Oh.
And you, I guess you just feel like if I'm just can do enough to just make it all go away, so it never bothers me again. But I don't think that happens. And
so live through the pain, work it through, let yourself cry. I mean, writing my book was very therapeutic for me. I cried a lot, and I remembered more than, you know, I had forgotten a lot. And you wrote somewhere on your website, I read that how we go through coincidences, coincidences in our lives, they're really, as one author put it, God winks. And they're not coincidences. I really believe that we're here for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can feel that, regardless of what your background, regardless of what you hurt, those hurts. When I was 8 years old, I was walking in the middle of the barnyard where the family that had taken me in, my relatives, and I was alone. And it was one of those quiet moments. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I heard a voice that gave me courage for the rest of my life.
Wow.
The voice, I didn't know whether it was God or whether it was my father, and it said, "You're here to learn."
Wow.
And at your young age, you have learned more than many children have learned. And then it was gone.
Wow. Wow. Oh, my goodness.
In other words, this is a blessing.
Wow.
And I've always taken it. I've never taken, regardless of what the situation, I've never, why me? That's never been a question I asked. It's just the way it is. And I truly believe that we're here to learn, to grow spiritually, and that we learn through difficulty. We don't learn when we're having a fun time. We don't learn when everything's just wonderful. It's nice to have those periods in between, and we do. But we learn when it's roughest.
Yeah, I think we learn when things are good. I actually think that life is meant to be joyful. Now, this is just what I think.
You're true. You're
and that we learn when we create ourselves or co-create joyful events. Mm-hmm. That if we pay attention, we can learn how did I create that. And even sometimes if we co-create a negative event, certainly a lot of trauma that happens to a person, I don't think they do create it. But some things we do create. I can think some things in my own life that I actually put my finger on that to help this thing I didn't want to have happen.
Right.
So if you pay attention, you can say, what did I do to help cause that to happen? And then learn not to do it again. Or if you create something good, how did I do that?
Exactly.
To just pay attention so you can do it again. I wanted to ask you, the organization that you founded, Society for Orphan Children in Canada, to help shed more light on the great struggles that kids are having growing up without their parents. When did you found this society, and was there an event that happened that caused you to say, other than having both of your children, your parents transition, was there an event that happened in your life besides that that made you say, you know what, I want to start this society?
Well, this is what happened. I had almost finished writing my manuscript, and I figured, well, I'm certainly not the only person who's lost their parents, so how many orphans are there in Canada? So I went on the web and I Googled, and I came up with nothing. And I went to Stats Canada, how many orphans do we have? I went to the public library, to the chief librarian, how many orphans do we have in Canada? There must be stats somewhere. There were none.
Wow.
And that's actually why I named my book Orphan, Through the Eyes of an Orphan. I put orphan in twice. Because in Canada, and I believe in North America, we don't like that word. It's okay for overseas, third world countries. Orphans are okay there, but we don't have those. We look after our orphans. We don't have orphans. And that really got my dander up. I was quite annoyed with the whole situation. So I decided to underline the word orphan and I used the word abandonment a lot because it's just what our society doesn't want to accept, that we do this.
Mm.
And this is why I put the title, and that's why I used the word abandoned. And that's why I created the society. And the society is to create awareness. We don't deal with individual, although I have on occasion found, it just makes me angry, at situations that happen in foster care. There's a lot of good that's done, but there's a lot of awful things. Children deserve to have their own loving family, permanent loving family.
Yes.
They deserve to be adopted. The fact is, one in six couples have infertility in Canada, and I believe the stats are probably similar in North America. One in six couples go to infertility clinics. There are many people who are looking to adopt children. And so the purpose of my website and our organization is to bring awareness to the fact that we have orphan kids right here in Canada. We have orphan kids in North America that would love, I've seen children beg to be adopted.
You make such a good point. I was just talking to a colleague, former colleague, this had to have been a couple of months ago, and she was telling me her heart really, really went out to children in, I'm going to make up a place. I forget where she was talking, but I'll say Cambodia. And she said, oh, just to adopt one of those children. And you make a good point. It's almost as though when we think of children to adopt or children who really need help, we go outside of the very country that we're living in.
Oh, yeah.
Where there are so many children. We think China, we think whatever country we're not living in, we think, I got to go help those poor little kids over there. Not that anybody's a poor little, or those children there. And you got kids probably in an agency less than 10 miles from where you live, and they don't even pop into your mind.
Exactly, and there's a lot of red tape involved. I think there's too much focus on foster care, not enough on adoption. I have some stats in front of me here, and they're always a few years old, right? But the stats we do have, which I got from adoptive agencies in Canada, it's not federal. Like, the federal government doesn't have any stats, but these are numbers that have been put together by this adoption adoption council of in Canada.
Okay.
And in 2003, there were 2,180 children adopted in Canada. We have about between, I think the number's gone to 28,000 children available for adoption. And only 2,000 children got adopted in 2003. In 2008, there's 1,200 that were adopted. And there are myths about what kind of children are adopted. They say it's only babies they want. Well, that's not true. They have it broken down to age. 8 to 10% of children are 9 to 15 years old. So there's a lot of children that are even over 15 years old. So, and that's true going overseas, that people will adopt entire families aged baby to 15 years old or 16 years old.
I don't know why that is, that people feel more, that is a bizarre phenomena, that people feel more of a need to adopt children overseas, and that they feel that somehow, I guess, I don't know if they feel it's more rewarding. I will tell you this, here in the United States, that I've had people say they would be interested in adoption, and then foster care just take, again, you feel like you're just like spending the summer with somebody, hoping that they'll ask you to stay for the rest of your growing up years, and then maybe they don't. So you just, I don't know, you don't feel like you're really fully there. Like you got to always keep your bags packed just in case. But what I wanted to say was, here in the United States, one of the things that kind of deters some people from adopting children here, from what I've heard, I've certainly not talked to everybody,
yep,
is that the older the child is, the more psychological issues the child might have, and then you're going to have to bring that into your home. That's one concern. And then the second concern is, and I don't know if they still do this in the U.S., if you adopted a child in the U.S. years ago, and I don't know if this has changed, they didn't tell you nothing about that kid's background, nothing about their biological parents. I mean, it was like a big secret, and there was no way you were going to be told. And if the child started exhibiting certain behaviors or psychological patterns, you just had to deal with it. And so a lot of people were a little put off, like, you know, I don't know. They were like, you, Elizabeth, and a lot of other people would be like the type of person – I'm talking about a child who might grow up and like to start fires, or a kid who might just do things that they would need special help with.
Yes.
A lot of people are afraid that if I adopt a child and then this kid starts starting fires or stealing or doing things, and it's because of something that happened earlier that I don't even know about, then a lot of people are a little like, I don't know if I want to walk down that road.
That would be on the extreme. There's no question that children that have been abandoned have fear, but it's not usually destructive, it's fear. And it is love that cures this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's love. Love is what cures all these inadequacies.
And that I do agree with. I just think that is one thing. I don't think it should stop a parent, somebody from adopting somebody, but I think that's one thing that people might have that this fear.
Every time I've given that talk, people come to me and they say, we tried to adopt. There's so much red tape that we couldn't adopt, and we've given up or gone overseas. I know there are some differences between the U.S. and Canada in this. In Canada, there's a lot of red tape. I believe the... there's less holdup in the United States on this, I believe. But I do know that many people have enough love in themselves to give children that are orphaned the love that they need. Because most of their symptoms are feelings of insecurity. They're a little afraid. Like, I took a puppy from the dog mill, right, from the dog pound. A year ago, he had been abandoned twice in his short life of 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that when the animals, like children, I'm drawing a parallel here, they understand what you're saying. And I was looking, I was doing so much work, I wanted other people to sort of baby or puppy sit him.
Mm-hmm.
And he started running into the corner of the basement, furnace room. And I couldn't understand this behavior until I figured out he understands what I'm doing.
Oh, okay.
And he thinks I'm going to give him up.
So
children that have been abandoned need to be reassured that they're not going to be abandoned again. If they're in foster care, they know that they're...
Yes.
They know they're going to be given up.
Yeah.
And so it's not permanent. They're looking for a permanent, loving home. And people who are adopting are not just adopting babies. They're adopting many up to 6 years old, and also, like I said, 8 to 10% or 15% of 15 years of age and over. So people want to adopt.
So what can governments do? What steps can they take, Elizabeth, to help improve like the temporary residents, like the foster care systems? And I've seen some states here in the United States start to focus more on adoption rather than the foster care. But so what can they do? How can, like in Canada, I'm not sure what some of the red tape.
One thing that the U.S. has is the U.S. government has stats on their orphan children. In Canada, we don't. The stats I get are not from the federal government. The stats I have are from agencies that have a system in place to get this information.
Mm-hmm.
But it's spotty and it's not completely accurate. So that's the beginning. I believe that awareness is the beginning of change.
No, I absolutely agree, and I thank you for doing what you're doing. I'm surprised that the government doesn't have. That's surprising.
Yeah. They made it a provincial thing, so and the provinces, the provincial government doesn't have stats either.
Hmm.
But so that is one thing that the U.S. has that Canada doesn't have. The other thing is that there needs to be a sensitivity. For example, I don't know if it's the same in the U.S., it may be. There is money given to people who foster children.
Yes, yes.
But there's no money given to people who adopt. And yes, money should not be an incentive for adoption. But as you suggested, that children who have been abandoned or such, they have psychological issues. Or they often have health issues. For example, myself, into my early teens, I had incredible asthma.
Mm.
So I had many, many trips to the doctor's office. That costs money, the prescriptions. So it's not about adoption. You want to give money because you're adopting. You want to give for the care, the extra
yes.
care. That's all.
I agree. I you know, it's so, it is so, you are really, and it's opening my eyes, actually. They do. You get money, and there are people in the United States that do foster care for the money. But yeah. you do get money when you bring children into the home. But if to give money to help a child when they're adopted. My aunt and uncle tried to adopt. And here in America, a lot of times, it's young African-American children just, oh, my God. In the foster care systems, it's just heartbreaking. But they tried to adopt. And they have one biological daughter, and my aunt, due for health reasons, was unable to have other children. But they couldn't. They said after all they went through, they said no because of her health issues, and they could have certainly have cared for another child, but they told them no. So it is. It can be difficult, despite how much a person might want to adopt, and they keep running into one. They just go through all these interviews and all these questions and all this,
yep.
that, and the other. Finally,
I mean, you'll not find a perfect home. And even where you have people who are having good incomes, every time I give a talk, people come to me. I tried to adopt. My husband and I tried to adopt. We have a good income. We're a stable family. But we've tried for 10 years. Didn't work. I've heard that story over and over and over again, and people get discouraged. They either give up the idea of adopting altogether or they go overseas.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Again, just going from my aunt and uncle's experience, they said it was just, once they thought they got over one hurdle, the agency raised another hurdle. So
yeah,
they got... After a while, they just said, you know what, maybe it's not meant to be, and they just, they were fatigued.
I'm happy about is that our agency, our society, our orphan children in Canada society that I've established have made a difference in the persistence of people in wanting to adopt Canadian children, and that's what we're about. Children deserve to have a loving, permanent home. That's the bottom line. And if you have puppies in your home, you don't choose any dog. You choose one that fits you.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly with children, you look at the child. Yes, I could love this child. And then you do.
Mm.
Like when you look at how many couples are infertile and would like to have
yes.
kids in their lives, the need is there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you have this need here, children want to be adopted. I've had children, the sweetest little kids. I've seen them. Please, in foster care, please adopt me.
Oh, gosh.
Please. Like, they're ringing with, please. I mean, this exists in our society, but we don't want to admit it.
Mm.
We would rather say, well, you know, over in that country, there's so many children. We used to have orphanages both in Canada and the U.S., and they were shut down because of abuse.
Yeah.
And although there are many, many good foster homes, there are those that were the abuses there.
Yeah.
And when you make the commitment and you adopt a child, it's out of love. Mm-hmm. And then the child has love and the parents have love.
Yeah, I think from our conversation and thinking, you know, I would say that a person who wants to adopt, and that's why I don't, the government's to do more, and I've seen some states in the United States start to put more emphasis on adoption. The people who would adopt a child, because foster care, you know, some people do that for the money, but for adoption, they really want to raise and care for that child. It's not a temporary thing. So
it's a commitment.
To see governments put more emphasis behind that, and not to take away all emphasis from foster care, but to put much more on adoption,
yes,
and rather than on foster care. We, with only 5 minutes left in today's show, just to let our listeners know, we are speaking with Elizabeth Wiebe. Her last name is spelled W-I-E-B-E. She's the author of the book Orphan, Through the Eyes of an Orphan. She's also the founder of the Elizabeth Wiebe Society for Orphan Children in Canada. You can hear her love for children coming out, and even though she's a woman who is doing a great love service to give others something that she herself did not receive. I wanted to ask you, with only 4 minutes remaining, Elizabeth, for all you've gone through and each of our listeners, the different experiences that each of us have, what's more important, Elizabeth, and especially I'm thinking to our listeners who've gone through something tragic or traumatic, which would you say is more important in how we develop and what we do in our lives? What happens to us, or what we choose to do with what happens to us?
Oh, that's a good question. There's an unknown author who said, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it.
Mm.
And I believe that's true.
Okay. We
don't think of ourselves as victims. Block as the person who has had the tragedy in their life. Don't think of yourself as a victim. Think that this is a learning thing. We are here for a reason, and do it with courage and heroism.
That is so important. I thank you so much for sharing that. And do you have any plans to write any more books? And if so, if you could let us know some of the other books that you are going to be bringing out in the future.
Well, I have been working at one, but it's going to take a little bit longer to write than this one. It would be more with relation to my brother's experience, who was really dropped between the cracks. He was older than me. He was at that awkward age of 14. And I have a person on my board of directors who was 14 years old when his mother died. His father had died earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that his most profound experience, he was very angry when I mm-hmm. met him, was that people let go of him and he became a nobody. Mm. See, when you have the power of the family behind you, no matter how dysfunctional that family is, somebody knows they're going to have to pay up. You know, somebody, if you talk to somebody without parents or family, well, you know, you're kind of vulnerable. But if you know mom or dad is going to come and hunt you down if you do something wrong, it's a totally different picture. Well, he tried to get into college, and he couldn't for a year because he had nobody to sign for him.
Mm.
So people drop you when you don't have that clout of family behind you. That's human nature. I don't know why it is, but it seems to be.
Mm. Oh, that, and I'm sure your brother will appreciate that you
would
give his story a broader voice. But we only have a minute left on the show today, and it went so incredibly, incredibly quickly. When you come out with your next book, please contact me so we can have you on again. I had a few other questions that I wanted to ask you, and I'm going to look for some organizations that with a broader platform for you to go on either television or radio that you could reach out to and share your story and see if, because this is something that you're doing to help others. But before we go, I wanted to ask, are there any last words of encouragement or advice that you'd like to leave with our listeners here at Off the Shelf, Elizabeth?
The idea is never to give up, and that we're not really alone. We're really not alone.
Oh, my goodness. I cannot thank you enough. To our listeners, you're just going to have to go get, I have to go get as well, Elizabeth Wiebe. Her last name is spelled, if you're looking for her on the Internet, W-I-E-B-E. She's the author of Orphan, Through the Eyes of an Orphan. She is just an amazing, amazing, amazing woman. She's the founder of the Elizabeth Wiebe Society for Orphan Children in Canada, and she may be coming out with a new book here, and then hopefully when it comes out, she'll let us know so we can let you know and have her back on the show again. We thank Elizabeth for being here. We thank all of you for being here with us. Please come back next Saturday, every Saturday here at Off the Shelf at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. To our listeners, please
thank
remember
you
that.
Thank you so much, Denise. I think you're wonderful.
Oh, I think you are too. Thank you. To our listeners, remember, you're so loved, so truly valued, and so blessed. And as Elizabeth Wiebe told us, to go forward with courage and remember that we are not alone. We have a great help that is here with us, an invisible help to the human eye, but we have a great help that is here with each of us. Thank you, Elizabeth. To our listeners, thank you. Elizabeth, I'll shoot you an email.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.